brought to you by Penguin.
Sorrowland by River Solomon, read by Karen Chilton. Part 1. Kingdom Plenty. 1. The child gushed out from twixt Vern's legs, ragged and smelling of salt. Slight he was, and feeble as a promise. He felt in her palms a great wilderness, such a tender thing as he could never be parsed fully by the likes of her. Had she more strength, she'd have limped to the river and drowned him. It'd be a gentler end than the one the fiend had in mind. Vern leant against the trunk of a loblolly and pressed the child naked and limp to her chest. His trembling lips lay right where the heart-shaped charm of a locket would be if she'd ever had a locket. "So that's how it's gonna be, hmm? Win me over with lip wibbles?" she asked, and though she was not one to capitulate to bids for love, this baby had a way about him that most did not. There was courage in his relentless neediness. He would not be reasoned out of his demands. Vern reached for the towel next to her, with what gentleness she could muster, and it wasn't enough to fill a thimble. She dragged rough Terry over the baby's mucky skin. "Well, well," she said, cautiously impressed. "Look at you." Vern's nystagmus and resultant low vision were especially troublesome in the waning light, but pulling her baby close lessened the impact of her partial blindness. She could see him full on. He was smaller than most newborns she'd had the occasion to handle, and had inherited neither her albinism nor her husband Sherman's yellow-bonedness. His skin was dark, dark, dark. And Vern found it hard to believe that the African ancestry that begat such a hue had ever once been disrupted by whiteness. The only person Vern knew that dark was Lucy. Viscous cries gurgled up from the child's throat, but died quickly on the bed of Vern's skin. Her flesh was his hovel, and he was coming to a quick peace with it. His bones were annals of lifetimes of knowledge. He understood that heat and the smell of milk were to be clung to, or else. It was a shame such instincts would not be enough to save him. As much as Vern had made a haven here these last few months, the woods were not safe. A stranger had declared war against her and hers, his threats increasingly pointed of late. A gutted deer with its dead fawn fetus curled beside, a skinned raccoon staked to a trunk, body clothed in an infant sleep suit. And everywhere, everywhere, cottontails hung from trees, necks and nooses, and feet clad in baby booties. The fiend's kills, always maternal in message, revealed a commitment to theme rarely seen outside a 5-year-old's birthday party. Another girl might have heeded the warnings to leave the woods, but Vern preferred this obvious malevolence to the covert violence of life beyond the trees. To be warned of bad happenings afoot was a welcome luxury. People might have followed Vern off the compound when she'd fled if there'd been a fiend there, discarding dead animals as auguries. "Hush now," Vern said. Then, thinking it was what a good ma'am would do, sang her babe a song her ma'am used to sing to her. "Oh, Mary, don't you weep, don't you mourn. Oh, Mary, don't you weep, don't you mourn. Pharaoh's army got drowned. Oh, Mary, don't weep." Even though it was a spiritual, it wasn't a song about Jesus direct, which suited Vern because she hated music about the Christ. It was one of the few items on which she and her husband Sherman agreed. She nodded along to every sermon he gave about the ways the white man plundered the world under the direction of this so-called savior. Whole continents reek of the suffering.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?